We begin this evening our discussions on Pesach and Haggadah Shel Pesach, and we open with a matter that relates to Pesach generally. And as we will see, there's quite a bit to say. The name of the Chag that is given to it by the Torah is Chag HaMatzos. We call it Pesach. That's not exactly how the Torah refers to it. We've mentioned in the past when the Torah, the time the Torah is talking about when it talks about Pesach is the time of the bringing of the Korban Pesach, which is actually on the 14th of Nisan. The 7 days that we call Pesach, the Torah calls Chag HaMatzos. And in Parshas Bo, the Torah states, Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochev. To eat matzahs for 7 days. Now we may know, and we'll see very clearly, that the halacha doesn't give us a mitzvah in that way of eating matzahs for 7 days. Actually, the Shulchan Aruch, and it's based on the Gemara, as we'll see, the Shulchan Aruch says, Ein chiyuv, there's no obligation per se of eating matzahs, Ki im balayla rishon, only on the first night. Ushar hayomim, with regards to other days of Pesach, rishus. It's rishus sounds like it means optional. Of course, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's a mitzvah of lechem mishnah, and options are somewhat limited. So one is, in a sense, moved back to matzah. But that is not an essential requirement of eating matzah. It's a mitzvah to eat lechem and matzah is all that's available. What's the background to this halacha that actually the obligation is only on the first night? Well, it's quite something. The Gemara in the very end of Maseches Pesachim and Daf Kuf Kaf notes that there is something of a contradiction between two psukim with regards to matzah. The pasuk that we quoted in Parshas Bo states, Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochelu, mitzvah of matzah for 7 days. Couldn't be simpler. And yet, in Parshas Re'eh, the pasuk states, Sheishes Yomim Tochlu Matzos, for 6 days we eat matzah, indicating that the seventh day, somehow, there is no mitzvah, apparently. And then what happens? One of the principles of Rabbi Yishmael, that is at the end of the Korbanos in the morning before Pesukah Dezimra, Rabbi Yishmael's 13 middos, shloshes or middos, shatoron edreshes bahem, I think we're more familiar with some than with others. We're quite proficient with Kal v'chomer and Gezeirah Shavah. As it gets a bit deeper, we perhaps don't have that much experience or exposure to them. But we're about to see one of them invoked. One of the middos states, Kol davar shehaya bichlal, anything that was part of a group, v'yotza min haklal lelamed, and left the group to teach something, lo lelamed al atzmo yotza, did not leave the group to teach only about himself, itself, ela lelamed al haklal kulo yotza, it teaches you about the entire group. Now, what does that mean for us practically? Says the Gemara, the seventh day was part of the group of Pesach. But it left the group, Yatza min haklal, because we see that only the first 6 days are Chova, the seventh is Rishus. Lo lelamed al atma yatza, that's not only to teach you about the seventh day, ela lelamed al haklal kulo yatza, it teaches you about the entire 7 days they are Rishus. So everything that we seem to have done now seems to be undone, and we're facing the prospect of eating matzah being rishus for all of Pesach, says the Gemara. But then what about the first night? Well, for the first night, says the Gemara, there's a special pasuk, Ba'erev Tochlu Matzos, which is a direct, independent mitzvah of eating matzah on Seder night. And that is how we arrive at this most interesting situation, which, as we said, is the halacha, that only the first night is a chova, the other nights are rishus. Now we need to find out, what does reshus mean? It sounds like it means optional. Is that the case? Well, we'll see. And one of the ways to test this question is by raising a very simple question that we should all be asking or noting. The bracha over the mitzvah of matzah is only made on Seder night. The bracha of Asher Kedishonu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu al achilas matzah is only made on Seder night. There is no bracha the next day or for the rest of Pesach. And the shaila is, where did that bracha go? Contrast it with sukkah, as we should, where every day that we eat in the sukkah, we make a bracha, Asher Kedishonu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu leshiv basukkah. Lo and behold, comes Pesach, and it's on Seder night we make this bracha, and we don't hear from it again. Why not? And here we may perceive a divergence of approaches. There are certain authorities from the Rishonim, the Kolbo, Maharil, Kodimok and Avram, who state, dare I say it flatly, that there's no mitzvah after the first night. I mean, that's what the Gemara has been saying all along. After the first night, it's reshus. If it's reshus, it's optional. And if it's optional, there's no mitzvah. And therefore, there's no need to, or no room to make a bracha. It is the equivalent, say these Rishonim, of eating kosher food. It's a mitzvah to eat kosher food in the sense that it's forbidden to eat non-kosher food. On Pesach, chometz is not kosher. So, by default, one eats matzah. But that's not the fulfillment of a mitzvah. Rather, it's reshus. Interesting. We will see, yet there is perhaps another approach. But it's also interesting to note that we do refer, as we mentioned before, to the entire 7 days as Chag HaMatzos. And why are we calling all 7 days Chag HaMatzos? Isn't that an indication that for all 7 days there's a mitzvah to eat matzah? It's not the default food. I'm not sure what the alternative would be. Could we call it Chag not eating chametz? It doesn't have the same ring to it. But nonetheless, we do call it Chag HaMatzos, like we call Sukkos Chag HaSukkos. So does that not tell us that there's some type of mitzvah all 7 days? Well, interestingly, not necessarily. There is a Taz, Rei Zahav, in Hilchos Sukkah, and he discusses Shmini Atzeres. And the Taz maintains that although it doesn't exactly look like it, Shmini Atzeres is essentially a continuation of Sukkos. Sukkos is 8 days. Shmini Atzeres has certain unique features, and we make Shechianu, and there's no mitzvah of Sukkah, but nonetheless, it is still part of the mitzvah, the Chag of Sukkos. He mentions this within the context of an interesting shaila. I think this may have happened to some people. What if a person, when he's davening on Shmini Atzeres, instead of saying, Atitein lanu, Moadim l'simcha es yom, Shmini Chag Atzeres azeh, he makes a mistake because he's been for 7 days saying Chag HaSukkos, and he says Chag HaSukkos by mistake on Shmini Atzeres. Does he need to, is that a mistake? Says the Taz, it's not a mistake, it's still part of Sukkos. Even though there's no mitzvah of Sukkah, which makes it sound like it's not part of Sukkos, the fact that the mitzvah no longer exists on the eighth day doesn't mean it's no longer part of the Chag. That's the point of the Taz. And says Taz, I will prove it to you. Because, isn't it true, for all 7 days of Pesach, we refer to the Chag as Chag HaMatzos, even though there is no mitzvah of matzah past the first night? What do we do on the first day and on the subsequent 6 days, referring to it as Chag HaMatzos? Rather, says Taz, you see from here that it is enough that at the beginning of the Chag, there is a mitzvah of matzah. Even for 1 day, the whole Chag is called Chag HaMatzos. Similarly, for my purpose, says the Taz, if the 7 out of 8 days is a mitzvah of Sukkah, the whole thing can be called Chag HaSukkos. Certainly, b'di'evet. So I mention that Taz only just to indicate that it's not so straightforward that just the very fact that we call the 7 days Chag HaMatzos, that there actually is a mitzvah of matzah for all 7 days. It's the Chag at the beginning of which there is a mitzvah of matzah. But here is the Taz subscribing to the position of the Maharil and others that beyond the first night, there's no mitzvah at all. And should we ask, if it's really true, that there's no mitzvah to eat matzah past the first day, which means when the Torah says, eat matzahs for 7 days, it means you have permission to eat matzah, rishus, you have permission, do I need the Torah's permission to eat matzah? I mean, essentially, that's the subtotal of the message, according to this approach, that you may eat matzah. Well, I should hope so. What else is there? There's no chametz, and is that a chiddush? And interestingly, one of the great Rishonim of Italy, Rabbi Yishai Mitrani, in his Chidushim on the Yerushalmi and Maseches Peah, says, yes, you do need to be given permission to eat matzah. It's not a mitzvah, but you need permission. Why? Because, says the Rabbi Yishaya, we find that there are certain mitzvahs that to add on to the mitzvah, right, beyond its time, is not acceptable. It is an Avera which is called Baltosif. And therefore one may have thought that when the Torah says the mitzvah, the time for matzah is the first night of Pesach, beyond that time, perhaps it's not acceptable. The next day, that's you're adding on to the mitzvah. Now, if that were true, then what could you eat? Not matzah, because it's baltosif. Not chametz, because it's chametz. So, is there anything else? To that end, the Torah actually does need to tell us, no, matzah is mutter. That's the chiddush of Shivas Yom Matzah Stochel. But it's not a mitzvah. Thus far, from this approach. Probably the most famous personality to represent another approach is the Vilna Gaon. Now the Vilna Gaon doesn't openly write about this in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, but we have another work of observations of the comments and actions and thoughts of the Vilna Gaon in Halacha, which is entitled Maaseh Rav. And Maaseh Rav, Simin Kuf Pei He, it states that the Vilna Gaon was of the opinion that there is a mitzvah on a certain level, there is a mitzvah of eating matzah every day of Pesach. Probably like we thought before we found out what the halacha sounds like. And even though the Gemara calls the other 6 days Rishus, says the Vilna Gaon, you need to know what the word Rishus means. Rishus doesn't mean purely optional, as if to say if you want, take it or leave it, it doesn't make a difference either way. Rather, what Rishus means, it's not an absolute obligation. If you didn't do this, you're not negligent or neglectful of an obligation. But if you do it, certainly a mitzvah. What's called in the halachic parlance, mitzvah kiyumis. It's you can't lose, it's win-win. If you don't do it, this type of mitzvah, there's not many like them, everything is okay, but if you do it, everything is a mitzvah. And in fact, a precedent for this idea that reshus means relative to an obligation, it's not a full obligation, but it's still a mitzvah, is from a comment of Tosfos regards to another mitzvah that is called reshus in the Gemara, and that is davening Maariv. There's a famous discussion running through the Gemara as to whether Tfilas Arvis is reshus or chova. The halacha, interestingly, is that it's rishus. However, Tosfos rush to assure us that when it says it's rishus, it doesn't mean it's no need to do it. There, it means that it's not an obligation on a level with other obligations. If another obligation came along, one would choose that instead of Maariv. But certainly, it is a mitzvah in every sense of the word. And according to this approach, we understand that the Torah calls these 7 days Chag HaMatzos Kipshuto, because it is a chag of 7 days where there's a mitzvah of matzah every day, just not on the same level. On the first night, chova, and beyond that, till the end of Pesach, as a mitzvah, which the Gemara calls Rishus. And once the Vilna Gaon has stated this position, so everyone starts to look around and see, does he have any allies or support or patrons among the earlier authorities? Well, possibly yes. Let's come back to our question with regards to not making a bracha after the first night, which we don't. Why not? Well, as we mentioned before, some Rishonim say, because there's no mitzvah, what's to make a bracha? However, the Baal Hamor, in his commentary to the end of Maseches Psachim, raises the question, why do we not make a bracha asher kedushanu b'mitzosef tzivanu al achilas matzah post Seder night? And he gives a rather wordy answer and states that because it's one doesn't need to eat matzah, if one ate other things, that's also okay. So it's not the sort of thing that you'd make a bracha on. Now, the Avnei Nezer of Sokachov takes a look at this Baal Hamor and says the Baal Hamor has taken about four times as long as he needed to say what he means to say. If there's no mitzvah after the first night, so then you don't make a bracha because there's no mitzvah, which is what everybody else said, or others said. The Baal Hamor didn't say that. The Baal Hamor said that it may be that it is a mitzvah, hence the question, but it's not a mitzvah that you need to do. It's a mitzvah that you could get by without doing, that you could eat, find other things to eat, and therefore it doesn't catch a bracha of vitzivon. There's no commandment to eat matzah past the first day, but nonetheless, a mitzvah on a certain level, it seems that there is. And that is how the Avnei Nezer understood the Baal Hamor. There is a mitzvah, it's just not enough to make a bracha on. And similarly, there's a Chizkuni, which is much debated, but according to many, his understanding is also that there is a certain level of mitzvah for the rest of Pesach. Interestingly, the Rambam discusses this, and we see his comments in the Mishneh Torah, and then his comments in the Mor Nevuchim. And interesting to see if and how they can be streamlined. In the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam emphatically states there is only a chiyuv on the first night. That's like the Gemara, that's like the Shulchan Aruch, and that's beyond that, it's Rishus. We don't know exactly what he means by Rishus, but he nonetheless emphasizes there's only an obligation on the first night. But in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam discusses why Pesach is 7 days long. And he explains that because there's a message in eating matzah. And if Pesach was only one day, the 15th of Nisan, so people often, you know, they eat a food in one day and not a food another day, and it doesn't mean anything yet. Different people eat different things at different days. Chametz or matzah, take your pick. And therefore, it isn't until we're eating matzah consistently for 7 days that the message of the matzah and what it represents and what it commemorates comes through. Those words of the Rambam really seem to indicate that there's a mitzvah of eating matzah for 7 days on some level. Because if the mitzvah is only on the first night and then afterwards you can eat what you want, so then you still don't have 7 days of eating matzah in terms of what the Torah was speaking about. The Mor Nevuchim certainly seems to relate to all 7 days as a matzah, as a mitzvah on some level. And what's interesting is this approach of the Vilna Gaon eating matzah gave rise to an interesting minhag of his. According to the Vilna Gaon, I believe this is the accepted halacha, there is no mitzvah of shalshudas on Yom Tov. Shalshudas is a mitzvah for Shabbos. However, says the Maaser Rav, on the last day of Pesach, the Vilna Gaon had shalshudas, even though it was Yom Tov. And the reason why is because it was the final, in his view, in his opinion, the final opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah of matzah. Everyone's got to have shalshudas on this Yom Tov, even though on other Yomim Tovim not. And what's interesting is Rav Zevin, in the Moadim Balocha, in the footnote, observes that here there actually is an alliance of two of the same minhag for two very different reasons from two people that probably didn't see eye to eye on many other things. Because the only one else who had a minhag of having shalshudas on the final day of Pesach was the Baal Shem Tov. And then from him came the Baal HaTanya, and then it's whatever has happened since then. So here you have Baal Shem Tov for Baal Shem Tov reasons, having shalshudas, the Vilna Gaon for Vilna Gaon reasons, so they're sharing the same meal, but not the same approach. What we have discussed so far, in a sense, is halachic, as if to say, is there a mitzvah? It's a fascinating question, and much has been spoken about it. But it is worthwhile pondering why it would be this way, if we may. Why is it that it's a different level of mitzvah, why would it go down a level, so to speak, from obligation to just, quote-unquote, mitzvah kiyumis? And this question is not addressed in a halachic forum, but in the Peirush of Rabbi Elazar Ashkenazi, the Maaseh Hashem, to the Haggadah. And he raises the question as to why Pesach is 7 days at all. In other words, Shavuos commemorates Matan Torah, or whatever it commemorates. It's 1 day, it's not 7 days. Sukkos is 7 days, says the Maaseh Hashem. It's got to be 7 days, because it commemorates something that happened for 40 years. So, I mean, Sukkos can't be 40 years every year. So we go a full hekev of a week, and it represents constancy, because the Anani HaKavod were there constantly. But when it comes to Pesach, which is Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, so the Yetzias Mitzrayim, we left on the first day of Pesach, so why would Pesach be more than 1 day? Well, the answer, of course, is that in a sense Pesach began on the first day, but didn't finish until the seventh day, in the sense that fundamentally we were set free on the 15th of Nisan, but the Geula wasn't complete until the seventh day when the Egyptians were drowned. That's when the Pasuk states, Vayosha Hashem Bayomahu Es Yisrael Miyad Mitzrayim. On that day Hashem saved, in the sense that finally saved, the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. Indeed, according to Rabbeinu Bachya in Parshas Va'era, we always come back to the Arba Lashonos of Geula, Botesi, Vizalti, Vigalti, Vilakachti. What's the difference between them? What do they refer to? According to Rabbeinu Bachya, the Ga'alti refers to Kriyas Yamsuf. In other words, the full redemption, Otzesi Vitzalti, is they're no longer slaves, but the full redemption, Ga'alti, reference to Kriyas Yamsuf and that finality, you know, parting ways with Mitzrayim. And interestingly, we express this in the morning, in the bracha after Shema, we say, Shira Chadosha, Shibchu Geulim L'Shimchas Vasayam. We call the Bnei Yisrael Geulim at that moment, once the Egyptians had been drowned. In a sense, therefore, we have an interesting situation on Pesach. Essentially, the day of our freedom is the first day. But there are supplementary levels, or finality levels, decisive levels of the same thing, taking it to its completion that happened over the course of the next 7 days. And therefore, says the Maaseh Hashem, since eating matzah represents Yetzia L'Cheirus, so on the night of Seder, which represents the moment of Yetzia L'Cheirus, that's when the Torah says it's a Chiyuv. Cheirus, the becoming free continued to be completed, but those supplementary levels, it's still matzah, but it's matzah it's not me'avdus l'cheirus anymore, it's from cheirus to cheirus with a capital ches. And that also gets a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah kiyumis. So you see how the parshanut here parallels the understanding of the mitzvah. What's fascinating in conclusion, having, in other words, Isa, I think we matter whoever you understand, like, I mean, that's the reality, and we don't make brachon, but the Stechemed, in his discussion of this matter, quotes one of the sources who recommends, it's a very wonderful thing to consider, that for those who say that there is a mitzvah on some level to eat matzah for all of Pesach, even though you're not going to make a bracha after the first night, so when you make the bracha Asher Kedushan Mitzvah Tzivon Alachil Asatzah on Seder night, you should have in mind the eating of matzah for all of Pesach. It will all be covered by that first bracha, which is a wonderful thing to have in mind, and if you have the presence of mind to have that in mind at that stage, well, that's also a wonderful thing. So, these are some of the discussions, some of the highlights with regards to this question, and we see it touches on so many different things, on the very name of Chag HaMatzos, on the making of a bracha, on the understanding of the mitzvah, and some of the why and the wherefore. Let us move from there to discuss some matters of Haggadah, and interestingly, the first item in the Haggadah that I wanted to talk about was the poem that we say in the beginning of Seder. Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpes, Yachatz. I believe it's pretty much universally accepted. This is the poem, although we see from the sources that it's from the Rishonim, there were a number of poems, and each one in their own way, detailing the source, the order of the evening, but this poem somehow had mazel, and it's become accepted pretty much in every household. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach devoted some attention to, it's from Rishonim, and it deserves all our attention to the poem. He notes, for example, that there's 15 steps, I believe. Only two of them are connected with the letter Vav. Kadesh, Urchatz. What's Urchatz? And washing. Why does it say and? Because it comes next. But then what comes next? Karpas and Yachatz. But we don't say V'karpas, V'yachatz, Umagid, V'rachta. That's an interesting shaila. I think you could go through that poem many times and never notice that of all the set 15, it's only Urchatz that's connected with the Vav. And Rav Shlomo Zalman explains that in his understanding, this is the author of this piyut is addressing an interesting shaila. Why do we wash at that point on Seder night? Well, we're about to dip a vegetable in salt water, and that brings us to a major discussion, which is called Dovar Shetivula B'mashke. If you take a food and you dip it in a liquid, so then do you have to wash your hands or not? Some people say yes. Some people say that's only for the time of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not, doesn't apply nowadays. But that's certainly the reason why we're doing it now. And we wash just before, without a bracha, but just before we dip the karpas into the salt water, so we wash our hands. Apparently, catering for that opinion. And the Taz, again, sought to demonstrate from here that that's the halacha. You see, when you take a vegetable, whatever, fruit, you dip it in liquid, you have to wash your hands beforehand. That's what's happening here. Because if that's not the halacha, then borrowing from a well-known expression, says the Taz, Manishtana halayla zemikol alelos. So why should this night be different? I mean, if it's not the halacha always. So it is halacha always. However, the Netziv, in his Perush, Imre Shefer, on the Haggadah Shel Pesach, has a wonderful explanation. He says it could be that the generally accepted custom is not to wash every time. You dip a vegetable or food in water. So should you ask, well, why is this night different? It's different for a simple reason. A major theme that runs through Seder night is Zecher LeMikdash. We remember how things were in the Mikdash. The classic example, of course, is Korech, Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel. And therefore, even those who do not have the custom generally to wash their hands before they dip a vegetable in water, but they all agree that in the time of the Mikdash it was done, and Seder night is Zecher LeMikdash. And that's why we do it this evening. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says that may be why Urchatz, the washing, is connected to Kadesh. Kadesh has a connotation of Kedusha. Kadesh leads to Urchatz. Because it's a night of Kedusha, where we're looking to replicate to a degree things as they were in the time of the Mikdash, in that holy environment, because of Kadesh, Urchatz. So now wash. Interesting. Without Kadesh, we wouldn't say Rosh. And there's another point, again, a fascinating observation. There's two washings that are referred to in this poem. Urchatz and Rochza. Urchatz before Karpas and Rochza before Motzi Matza. And they're both Netilas Yadayim, but they're not phrased exactly the same way. Rechatz is a command. Rechatz, wash. Rachza is washing. What's the difference between wash and washing? I mean, they both involve water. What's the difference in connotation? And it can't be, just so that it should not be said, that the poem should rhyme. We can't allow form to triumph over substance here. So, Rav Shlomo Zalman says the difference is, if people are always in the habit of doing something, you don't need to tell them to do it. You just need to tell them it's time to do it. I think that's correct. After Kiddush, and then even Shabbos. So one doesn't say, wash. You just announce. Netilas Yadayim. No one ever says, Tlu Yadayim. Because everyone knows that just before a motzi you have to wash. And that's why before matzah, you don't need to say wash, you just need to say washing. Rachza. You just need to let people know when. They'll all wash. But before the vegetable, many people would not wash because it's not a widespread custom. You can't just say washing, then they know what you're talking about. And that's why you have to say urchatz, to tell them to wash. That's the difference in intonation between telling people to wash, where they wouldn't necessarily by themselves, and telling people there when the time is to wash. Okay. The only other element that's in the command form is kaddish. It's also a command. It doesn't say kiddush. Now, people normally make kiddush. However, says the Shlomo Zalman, they don't always make kiddush straight away. They could sit down, make themselves hamish, and discuss either the chazan or the rabbi or both. And here we know the halacha is you've got to start the seder as quickly as possible. So those are the two commands. Kadesh, meaning the time has come right now, and urchatz, for reasons that we said. So it's fascinating just to see how the attention given to these things by the greats, in this instance of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. I wanted to move from there to something that we say at the end of Halach Ma'anya. We conclude Halach Ma'anya, we say, Hoshata Hocha L'shana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael. This year here, next year in Israel. And I saw an interesting Shaila raised today. I came into possession just yesterday of a very wonderful commentary on the Haggadah by someone called Reb Leib Mintzberg, who's one of the great Balei Parshanut of our time. And he asked the question, we actually express our hopes for where we'd like to be next year twice at the Seder, once at the beginning and once at the end. In the beginning, in Halach Ma'ani, we say, L'shana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael. And at the very end, well, it depends how you define the end, but just after the beginning of Nirtza, we say L'shana Haba B'Yerushalayim. So why is it that it took us from the beginning of Seder to the end of Seder to discover where exactly in Israel we'd like to be next year? In the beginning, we say next year in Israel, next year, in the end, we say next year in Jerusalem. And Reb Leib Mintzberg explains that to understand the difference in location being referred to, we need to appreciate the difference in context that each statement is being said. Why is it that we conclude Halach Ma'anya by saying L'shana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael? It's a sort of thing that you normally do say at the end. You know, at the end of Yom Kippur, we say L'shana Haba Yerushalayim at the end of Seder. And here, we're just starting and we say L'shana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael. But the truth is, says Reb Mintzberg, it's part of Halach Ma'anya. Because Halach Ma'anya, and here important to note, I found it fascinating, his approach to Halach Ma'anya is entirely positive. He does not translate Lach Ma'anya as bread of affliction, but rather, as certain Rishonim do, the Ritva and others, Abar Benel, I believe as well, Lach Ma'anya means poor bread. Not poor man's bread, poor bread. And what does poor bread mean? It means there's very little to the bread. That's what poor bread. The bread is poor. Not that it belongs to someone who's poor. It's just flour and water and nothing. Not even air. And the idea of there being so little to the bread, I mean, what does that mean? What it means is that, why was it matzah? As we go on to say, we eat matzah because the bread didn't have time to rise, because we left so quickly. Which is an incredible scoop here. Because according to Rav Mintzberg and those that he identifies with, Lach Ma'anya is a zecher lecheirus. It's not a zecher for oppression or affliction. Lach Ma'anya, there's so little happened to the bread because we came out so quickly. And if that sounds like a radical approach, it's actually backed up by none other than the Torah. Because Lechem Oni is referred to in the Torah, interestingly, not in Chumash Shemos, but in Chumash Devarim, from Parshas Re'eh. The Torah says to eat Lechem Oni and tells us why. It says, Tochal olav matzos Lechem Oni, ki v'chipozon yotzasa mer Mitzrayim, because you left Mitzrayim in a hurry. Which is amazing. Because the Pasuk itself is giving you the reason for Lechem Oni. Why do you eat lechem only? Because you left Mitzrayim in a hurry. That's completely contrary to the common notion of what lechem only is. On the contrary, if lechem only is bread of affliction, it should have said, eat lechem only because you were afflicted. And there's plenty of times in the Torah where it says, v'zacharta, ki evida yisab, eretz Mitzrayim, ki meru echei Mitzrayim, etzchein. We don't say that. The reason given for lechem only is because you came out so quickly. Because that's what it's about. Doesn't sound so radical anymore. And thus we introduce in this, from the very outset, we're introducing the matzah as something that represents freedom, and therefore we go on to kol dichben yeseh v'yechol, which is clearly not an actual invitation for reasons that we've discussed at length in the past. It's way too late, no one's listening, hopefully no one's listening. If anyone is listening, you probably don't want them at your seder. I mean, they must be eavesdropping. So if you say kol dichben yeseh v'yechol, and then someone knocks on the door, you know, I couldn't help overhearing that. So it's a statement of expansiveness. It's a statement of chayrus, whoever wanted them come. It's a way of just establishing that we are free and celebrating our freedom. The only thing is, we're not as free as we should be. Because still in Golos, or more correctly, back in Golos. Halach Ma'ani is only said in Golos. Halach Ma'ani was not said in times of Geula. And it's really coming to address this question. And the answer is that even if we're back in Golos, we're still free. And the reason why we're still free is because we were taken out of Mitzrayim. Being taken out of Mitzrayim and connected to Hashem means He's there for us and will ultimately take us out of the Golos. Golos for us is now an unnatural state and not a permanent state. And we look forward to next year. And therefore, we say this year here, next year in Eretz Yisrael, about where we generally see ourselves next year. And because that's true, we consider ourselves free even this year, and that's why we celebrate with the matzah. So Lashon Haba Ba'aret Yisrael at the end of Halach Ma'anya is about where we hope to be generally, not just on Pesach, the whole time in Eretz Yisrael, and not just in Jerusalem. There's plenty of other nice places in Eretz Yisrael, and they're all part of Eretz Yisrael. But at the end of the Seder, says of Mintzberg, it's something else. We've just gone through the Seder. And what we mean to say is that, as we say, kasher zachinu l'sader oseh kei nizkeh la'asoso. Just like we were zochet to go through the order of the Seder, we hope to do the real thing. But that's only in Eretz, that's only in Yerushalayim. And that's why in Nirtza we say l'shon haba b'Yerushalayim. Not that we're all going to live in Yerushalayim the whole time, but we hope to be in Yerushalayim this time next year for Seder. So that's the very elegant explanation of Rav Mintzberg, the difference in the a connotation between Lashon Haba Ba'arad Yisrael and Lashon Haba B'Yerushalayim. With regards to Avodim Hayinu, there is a basic question that is raised by Mefarshim, and we state in Avodim Hayinu that had Hashem not taken us out of Mitzrayim, Hari Anu, Baneinu, Baneinu, Meshubodim Hayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim, we would still be enslaved to Paro. And the Mefarshim ask a Balabatisha question. Necessarily so. Civilizations have come and gone. I mean, Egypt's not what it used to be. And many peoples were enslaved and then set free. And maybe we'd be one of them. Could be. Hasn't history shown it's something that occurs? So I must mention, I remember many years ago at our Seder table, my father, Olav HaShalom, raised this question. And he answered, I believe in the name of the Chidah, that what we take for granted, that an enslaved nation can sometimes be set free, that actually is unnatural. Because wherever you're headed, you only end up more that way. It's not normal for an enslaved nation somehow to get their independence. It only became possible as an emanation of the Chiddush of the Jewish people being set free. They were the first people ever to set free. And that instilled within the nature of the world the possibility that an enslaved nation can in time get their freedom. And therefore what we take for granted and refer back historically can't be a question as to, well, couldn't that have happened? That all of that has only happened because it happened to us first. Very interesting answer of the Chidah. Rav Dessler, in a different approach, in the Michtav Meliyahu, directs our attention to the fact that we shift terminology, and the more attention we pay to detail, the more we will leave Beruchush Gadol. In the beginning we say, Avodim hayinu lefarav Mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro. Subsequently we say, had Hashem not taken us out, we would have been Meshuabodim lefarav Mitzrayim. Now Meshuabodim sounds very similar to Avodim, but it's not the same. We don't say that if Hashem had taken us out, we would still be Avodim lefarav Mitzrayim. What's the difference between Avodim and Meshuabodim? Well, Avodim, as its name suggests, slaves. Meshuabodim is different. Meshuabodim means under the control, under the influence of something. When you lend someone money, their estate becomes meshubad to you. You don't own it, but you have control over it. You have say over it. And this brings us to the very important question as to what happened to us in our time in Mitzrayim. Was it good for the Jews being in Mitzrayim or no? To a certain degree, absolutely. But there's a certain point beyond which it would not have been good for us to stay there on any level. On the one hand, Jewish identity is somehow being forged. And in fact, Mitzrayim is referred to by the Chumash itself as Kur HaBarzel, which is a smelting furnace, which means that it looks like the whole thing is falling apart and melting, but it's being purified through that intensity. But there's only so long you can keep it in the furnace. And beyond that point, it's forget about it. Essentially, the moment of Yetzias Mitzrayim was the biting point, whereby we'd been in Mitzrayim with all the difficulties there long enough to have assembled our identity or the makings of identity of the Jewish people, but it wouldn't do to stay there any longer. Longer, and we completely have lost any makings of identity and fallen prey to everything that we'd been exposed to for all of that time, all of the Egyptian values and everything. And that's what we mean when we say that had Hashem not taken us out, we don't know if we would have been Avodim there. Maybe we'd be set free. But we'd be a vassal people to Egypt. We'd be honorary Egyptians. We'd be the 52nd state of Egypt. Meshuabodim hayinu leparo b'Mitzrayim. We would remain Meshuabodim, and that would be unacceptable. That's where Hashem had to take us out exactly at that time in order to allow us to disavow ourselves and disassociate ourselves fundamentally, although it took time, from the influences of Mitzrayim. That's the difference between Avodim and Meshuabodim. What I wanted to spend the final few moments discussing is something that we never get to because it's too far away from the beginning and not close enough to the end, and it's been a number of years already, and when I tell you what it will be, you'll understand that I felt that enough is enough. I'd like to talk about Dayenu. And this is from the body of the Haggadah itself. And after we discuss all the plagues, so the Haggadah says, Kama malos tos lamakom aleinu. And then we launch into Ilo Hotzionu, etc. Now, actually, those words themselves are not so straightforward. What is the meaning? Kama malos tos lamakom aleinu. I believe the common translation is, how many levels of kindness did Hashem bestow upon us? Malos tovos. The problem is, if it's about kindness that Hashem did to us, so we wouldn't say kama malos tovos lamakom aleinu, we'd say kama malos tovos mehamakom lonu or aleinu mehamakom. It's about the kindness from Hashem to us, not to Hashem, lamakom. And that's why certain Meforshim explain that Malos Tovos, these great levels of kindness, how much they obligate us to give thanks to Hashem. La makom aleinu, how much incumbent upon us is it to thank Hashem. Interestingly, there is a Haggadah which is called the Haggadah of the Malbim. It's not probably, or certainly the distinct possibility that it's not written by the Malbim. There's theories about that, but certainly in the style of the Malbim. And he there explains that the word ma'alos here doesn't mean levels, but rather ma'alos is like we say, le'ale u le'kales. It's an expression of praise. Kamama, and one of the Rishonim also, a perish, I believe it's called Manishtana, it's from one of the Rishonim, also says a similar thing. Kama ma'alos tovos, how much praise is incumbent upon us again. So the object is there. Ma'alos are the praises. There are a number of particulars about Dayenu that require investigation specifically because they don't seem to be distinct stages, but they rather seem to be stages why if the next thing hadn't happened, then the first thing wouldn't mean anything. And the way that I would like to investigate them is through what, for me, was one of the most profound Haggadah experiences of the last number of years, which is the explanation of the Aruch HaShulchan to Dayenu. And as we will see, it is quite outstanding. He begins by noting that at the end of Shema, or straight after Shema, and Shacharis, we unleash a string of terms. It goes on for a long time. And it seems to be in many ways of saying the same thing. And halodavaru, it's not really like any other section of the Torah. He basically found 15 ways of saying the same thing. And says the Aruch HaShulchan, there are 15 words here, from V'yatziv until V'yafeh. These 15 words are referring to the 15 Ma'alos Tovos that began with Yitzias Mitzrayim. We don't go through all of them explicitly every day for technical reasons. We refer to them every day. On Seder night, we give them full expression. And he proceeds to explain in a most incredible way how each of these 15 words, and in so doing, gives us insight into the sections of Dayenu. And let us follow. I'm simplifying and somewhat adapting, again, for simplicity's sake. Whoever wants, if you have time, it's a nice 7-page dissertation on Dayenu. So we begin with V'yatziv. And V'yatziv corresponds to the first Ilu Hotzionu Mimitzrayim. And what's V'yatziv got to do with Hotzionu Mimitzrayim? Well, we should note that we say V'yatziv in the morning, contrasted with V'emunah in the evening. Emes V'yatziv, Emes V'emunah. And that's based on the pasuk Lahagid Baboker Chastecha, V'emunascha Baleilos. The difference between Yatziv and Emunah, says the Aruch HaShulchan, is that they're both expressions of affirming something. But Yatziv is affirming something that happened, Emunah is affirming something you believe will happen. And in fact, he quotes a pasuk in Daniel, which relates to the episode of Nebuchadnezzar. He had a dream, he forgot his dream, and Daniel reminded him of his dream and then told him what it meant. That was the statue with the head of gold and the torso and the arms. And this is in Perek Beis of Daniel, and he's told him what the dream was, and then he told him what the meaning was, and then Daniel says in Pasuk Tesvav, Yatziv Chelma Umeheman Pishrei. Yatziv Chelma, the dream is Yatziv, and the interpretation is Meheman, is Ne'eman. And here you see that what Daniel is doing is he's establishing the veracity of both of what he's saying. Yatziv, because he reminded Nebuchadnezzar, so Nebuchadnezzar, it's the dream that he had. That's Yatziv. That's done. And then Meheman, Emunah, is what's to come. That's the difference between Yetzias Mitzrayim in the morning and the evening. In the morning, we focus on Yetzias Mitzrayim as it was, remembering and celebrating. In the evening, which is more a time of darkness, we focus on it for what it means about the future, the root of all subsequent geulos. That's Yatziv versus Emunah. Number two, V'nochon. V'nochon, correct, established. That corresponds to the second statement of Ilu Asa Behem Shifotim. That's about the justice and judgments meted out against the Egyptians. And in a sense, that's called V'nochon because it showed how everything about Yetzias Mitzrayim was correct. It's Mido Keneged Mido. It's Nachon. It's established because it's correct. And that was done through the Shvatim. It was demonstrably clear that the Egyptians were getting what they deserved. It was Nachon, all the things that happened to them. Number three, V'kayam. V'kayam, enduring. corresponds to Ilu Osab Elohehem. This refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu disabling the spiritual forces that are normally the executive forces for the Egyptians, and that disabled them essentially from on high to be able to reclaim the Jewish people, and that meant that the Geula from Mitzrayim was permanent. Had they suffered only a loss on the lower realms, then the higher realms could yet inject force into them and they could get themselves back together, perhaps recapture the Jewish people. Disabling them on the highest level, as it says, Al Tzava Marom Ba Marom, meant that the Egyptians could never recover in that way and never reclaim them. And that's why it corresponds to the word Kayam, because Kayam means enduring. It meant that the Yetzias Mitzrayim was final. Or as they say in modern Hebrew, Totalit. No going back. Number four, V'yashar, that corresponds to Harag B'charehem, and in a sense, Nochon and Yashar are quite similar to each other. Fair, correct. And here, Yashar refers to Harag B'charehem. It's mentioned by itself because this is the only Midah K'neged Midah which is explicit in the Pasuk. In the very beginning, Moshe says to Paro, B'ni B'char Yisrael, Yisrael am I B'char, and you're not sending them out, so you'll lose your B'char. And therefore it's in a category unto its own, how the yashar there of Makos Becheros, L'makim Mitzrayim B'Becherehem, that's V'idu Hargis B'Becherehem. Number five, V'ne'eman. That corresponds to the words, Ilu Nasamnonu Es Mamonam. That refers to us leaving Baruch Hush Gadol, and that is Hashem Ne'eman, faithful in keeping his promise of Acherechen Yetu Baruch Hush Gadol. Indeed, he was super faithful, more than faithful, because, as we've mentioned many times, it was really for Avram, Shelo Yomer Oso Tzadik, because the Jewish people hadn't even been there the full term, not strictly speaking, 400 years. There shouldn't be Acherechen Yetu Baruch Hush Gadol. There shouldn't be Baruch Hush Gadol because we weren't there for Acherechen. But nonetheless, Hashem is Ne'eman, Ne'eman L'Shelim Sachar, even beyond, in a sense, the call of duty of what he said. Then we come to three words, Ahuv, Chaviv, and Nechmat, which sound actually very similar to each other, and they're all about Kriyas Yamsuf. The difference between Kriyas Yamsuf, what was, in a sense, the Chiddush there, was that so far Hashem's involvement had been retribution for the Egyptians, from which we then vicariously were set free. But the first act that he overtly did for the Jewish people was to split the sea for them. That was done for them, to give them a path of escape. And that's the beginning of Ahuv, in other words, to show his Ahava directly for Bnei Yisrael, to give them this path. The Chaviv corresponds to Ilu Heviranu Besocha Becharava. And here is one of the questions that Mefarshim asked Abu Draham. I mean, what's the goal of splitting the sea if we didn't pass through? I mean, if we split the sea and it didn't pass through, then nothing's happened. It's a melachah shenetzricha legufa. So how is this a separate stage? However, Abu Draham says the operative word here is the word cherova, on dry land. The seabed is not naturally dry. It's not naturally exposed. But when it is, it's muddy and it's dirty and it's hard to traverse. An added, almost like sub-miracle of Yetzias Mitzrayim is that not only did Hashem expose the way through the sea, he dried it up to make it easy to cross. That's a separate kindness. And in a sense, that's called chaviv, because it's chaviv, chiba yisera. In addition to the ava of letting us escape through the Yamsuf, there was this added, almost like added touch of drying the seabed, becharava, to allow us to go through. Not that we shouldn't have to trudge through. In the way that it would naturally be within those circumstances. Then comes number eight, Nechmad. And Nechmad corresponds to Ilu Shikat Sarenu Besocho, drowning our oppressors. And we see that in a sense the word Nechmad here comes the word Chemda, the Jewish people's desire to attach themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu came when they saw how finally he had dealt with their oppressors. And that's why we say V'ra'u Vanav Gevuraso, at that time, Shibchu V'hodu L'shmo, there was this desire to connect with Hashem, seeing how completely he had redeemed them. Then we come to numbers 9 and 10, Na'im v'Nora. Na'im corresponds to Ilu Sipek Tzarkenu Bamidbar Barim Shana, Hashem providing our needs. And it's called Na'im because it was done in such a pleasant way. The walk be'era shel Miriam, the waters were sweet, the slav was good for us, the man was good for us. The Aruch HaShulchan understands that the man is part of Sipek Tzarchenu. And without man, that was our main food. and it was na'im, it tasted whatever you like. And therefore, all of that, the way Hashem provided for our food and drink is all called na'im. But then we come to Nora, and then man gets its own mention, even though it's part of the earlier clause. And the reason why is because there's something about the man. It monitored and reacted to the behavior of the Jewish people. As the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yuma, the tzaddikim, it fell close to them, but for the Beinonim, a bit further away for the Rishonim. So everyone had their behavior constantly, they had to watch themselves, because they saw that the results through the man would be telling. And sometimes it was a bit of a walk of shame for a person to find their man. Some people prefer to go hungry, so they shouldn't have to go X kilometers and find their man. Wasn't so easy. Ask not for whom the man falls. And therefore, that corresponds to Venora, because Hashem was revered and awed in that way. People realized that their behavior needs to be on par. Then we come to Va'adir, which corresponds to, that's number 11, corresponds to Ilu Nosolano Es HaShabbos, because Shabbos represents Hashem's power in controlling the world. Adir Bamarom Hashem. And then we come to numbers 12 and 13, Umetukan Umekubal. And they correspond to Ilu Kervon Lefnei Har Sinai and Ilu Nosolano Es HaTorah. And it's another one of those occasions where Mefarshim asks, well, what's the point of getting to Har Sinai if we didn't receive the Torah? How are they two separate clauses? But the point is, says Abu Dram, that the very fact that we came to Har Sinai already had a purifying effect on us. The Gemara says, as we stood at Har Sinai, Paskazu Amason, all the ill effects of the Eitz Hadas were receded, and we were elevated to a much higher plane. That's even before we received the Torah. That's itself a benefit. And that's why Kervanu L'fnei Har Sinai we call Umitukan, because we became Mitukan, right? We became rectified and prepared. And then Mekubal, actual receiving of the Torah. And the final two are V'tov V'yafeh, which correspond to Eretz Yisrael and the Beis HaMikdash. Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Chemda Tova Ruchava, and V'yafeh is the Beis HaMikdash, which is called V'yafeh Nov, Klilas Yofi. That's V'yafeh. So these are the 15 steps. I was completely spellbound by this dissertation of the Aruch HaShulchan and his commentary Leil Shimurim. It's unbelievable. And just to see that's what we're referring to every day in that group of words that we say. The moral of the story, by the way, I don't know if I'd recommend presenting the entirety of this explanation at the Seder table. You may find the words Dayenu being recited at you in a way that they were not originally intended. But certainly for our own appreciation, and the moral of the story, as Rav Soloveitchik explains, is that when it comes to saying thank you, you don't wait till the process is finished. Every appreciable step within the process, it's already grounds to say thank you. At any point we could have said, but there's still so much more that we need or that we're lacking, it doesn't mean you don't say thank you for now. And that's true not only for that's true about all of Seder night, because Seder night is itself the beginning of a process. It doesn't culminate till Shavuos. It doesn't mean we don't say thank you for what we have, and then look forward to more. So that's all for this evening. Yigiyos zman kriyas shma shel arvis. That's what Karen and Mitzvah